welcome back to This Week on Channel 9. I'm Brian Keller.
I'm Dan Hernandez.
Hope you all had a nice Thanksgiving for those of you in the U.S. and for everyone else. Sorry for not getting back to you to your emails.
Exactly. So, got a lot of stuff to go on. Windows Live updates. What's this about?
Right. My inbox on Monday just started blowing up with all these people that wanted me to join their Windows Live spaces. I couldn't figure it out. But when Nick Fillingham was here, we talked about the Wave 3 of changes that are coming to Windows Live and how tons of stuff is happening. So Spaces now supports aggregation or linking up to all sorts of social networks. Facebook, for example. They also have 25 gigs of storage in my SkyDrive account.
That's awesome.
Windows Live Photo Gallery. And so all this stuff is going online now. And so you can go take advantage of it.
Excellent. Excellent. Yeah. So this is Windows Live updates. I know this stuff is now all live. Is there anything that isn't live
yet? No pun intended.
Groups, I know, was the other one. And events and all those updates as well.
Yeah,
so just a lot of stuff, I guess.
Yeah, a ton of stuff. I'm sure Angus will chime in and update us if we've got anything wrong here.
Yeah, he cracks the whip every now and then.
So you've got, you just kind of gave birth to your first book here.
Yeah. Well, I've contributed to a couple of books, but this is the first one that I've done, like, you know, more than a chapter.
Right. Yeah, and you were lead author on this, right?
With Brian Peek.
Yep. And so this is Coding for Fun. You've mentioned it a couple times on the show.
Yes.
And so congratulations, first of all.
Yeah, I think, so here's the cool part, like being a geek and loving Dignation. We actually got Alex Albrecht to write an endorsement for the book, which is the quote here.
That's awesome.
Yeah, I know. So it's like, this book is amazing. Scope is so wonderfully broad that anyone who has an interest in designing games at any level should read this book.
Is this one of those times where you write the quote for them and get them to put their name on it? What he actually said.
That was the crazy thing, is absolutely not. The other thing that Alex Albrecht works on is Project Lore. Mm-hmm. So, and he founded that, which is a World of Warcraft show plus blog. It's like five guys talking about World of Warcraft. And since we have the World of Warcraft feed reader, that's one of the things he was looking to do with Project Lore, which is what things could he actually bring from the show into World of Warcraft. And we show how to hack that book.
Nice.
So, yeah, the only other cool part is for the holidays, 34% off the cover price. 34% off.
Wow.
Hottest. $26.
Yeah, and the dollar's worth nothing nowadays. So
yeah, that's so like, in euros, that's like...
Yeah, half a euro.
Yeah, that's like half a Danish.
Yep. Nice.
The dessert, not the people. So I think the other cool part is the contributors. So it's like some of my favorite people. Brian Peek, a lot of people know him for doing the .NET BattleBot way back in the day.
Right. Yeah.
And he's the guy that does the Wiimote library, and that's used in so many projects. And he's a regular Coding for Fun contributor. Mm-hmm. He did a number of projects, everything from the Windows Home Server chapter to
Wiimote-controlled cars.
XNA game, which is a Space Invaders clone, and shows you how to build both for the XNA, the PC, and for Zune. So it's like a great way if you never built a game before.
Right.
Johnny Chung Lee actually wrote a chapter. So people that are familiar with YouTube know him. He's like a YouTube star. And he got voted, what was it, like the top tech review innovator, MIT's tech review innovator under 35.
Did you really just say people who are familiar with YouTube?
Yeah, well, people that know YouTube videos know Johnny from YouTube.
Okay.
Like, people that, because he was in the top rated videos of all time.
Right under Lonely
Girl
25.
Yeah. No, this is reviewed, not watched.
Oh, okay.
But then, it's like 6 million views. The project he goes through is his whiteboard project, which is a Wiimote whiteboard. You get a projector, and using the infrared, you can actually attach something to a pen that you carve out that has an infrared light, and it tracks, and you literally have a digital whiteboard for the cost of, you know, $500 for a projector and the pen.
A couple controllers, yeah.
Yeah, exactly, yeah. And of course, the Wiimote control.
Right.
Gabor Radke, who's the developer for Add-on Studio for World of Warcraft, helped co-author the World of Warcraft chapter that we talked about.
Mm-hmm.
Clint Rutkus, people know him as Mr. Coding for Fun, as well as Disco Dance Floor, and now Mr. Segway Skateboard.
And the Automated Bartender.
Yeah, Automated Bartender, which, yeah, it's just a Jimmy Kimmel shot that we should do for a Maker Faire that didn't make it onto Jimmy Kimmel. Actually, I don't know if we can find the footage for that, but that would have been great. Yeah.
Sweet.
He chugs liquor from Jimmy Kimmel's glass. It's hilarious.
I didn't know that.
Yes.
Nice.
So he worked on Twitter Vote, which lets you build custom polls for Twitter. So you can say Angelina Jolie versus what's her name?
Jennifer Aniston.
Yeah.
And no then, contest. Yeah,
of course.
Jennifer Aniston every time.
Angelina. Okay. And then of course my ass. So it's a who's who of people.
Yeah, thanks for adding me to that list too. But
yeah, exactly.
Me.
Well, yeah. I don't have time. I'm so busy. But Brian actually did some of the reviews.
Yes.
But what I wanted to actually show was one of our apps, which is InnerTube. Which is automatically downloading hundreds of videos from YouTube.
You're going to show this?
Yes.
We're going to have a demo?
We're going to have an actual demo on This Week on Channel 9.
All right.
Last one ended quite terribly when you decided to debug the site in real time.
That's right, yes.
Yes.
I will get it right one of these days.
All
right,
so let's jump to the demo. So let's jump into the code. This is, actually, we'll show you, this is a site called YouTube. I don't know if you're familiar with it.
Yeah.
But it has videos on it.
My mom talks about it all the time.
Okay.
Yeah.
So I've recorded a couple favorites, and what I want to do is take these favorites with me on a flight, right? So I
want
to...
Offline. You want offline YouTube videos.
Offline YouTube videos.
Brilliant.
So, you know, your regular YouTube video, what we're going to do is just show you... Got a couple breakpoints in InnerTube here.
And this is a sample that ships with your book. So you talk about how to do all this stuff. I know because I tech reviewed and I fixed all your code.
Yes, yes, yes. Yes. I wouldn't say that, but...
I did.
So this is a bunch of videos that I've downloaded. These are my feeds. So it's a three-pane view. You can see those same feeds here and the videos. What I'm going to do is just click the Start Downloads.
And this is WPF?
This is a WPF front end.
Okay.
What it's going to do is go to YouTube, call the YouTube web services, use link for XML to pull the list of feeds down.
Okay.
Right. Next thing it's going to do is actually go to download the thumbnail image and the video itself. When it does that, it actually needs to do a special thing to get around YouTube, which tries to block people from downloading their videos. The way it has to do that is actually screen scrape the page. So we'll see that in action as well.
Okay.
So let's just make sure we have our breakpoints set up here. Okay. So let's get a little crazy. Click Start Download, and hopefully this will hit our breakpoints. Okay. So we're inside a method called Download Video.
Mm-hmm.
And if we try and... Look at this. This is an actual video on YouTube that we've pulled from the things. And maybe you can look here. There's the average rating. There's a number of categories, a description, a bunch of information about the videos.
Okay.
Now, the way we download these videos, and we do them a little differently. So normally you can use a web client to download. What we're actually going to do is read in a stream, a web stream, and we're going to do 65K bytes at a time.
Mm.
And then this is our timeout. And the reason we do this is because when you're downloading like a 10 meg file, if you're using the web client, it'll actually time out. Imagine downloading 25 videos at a time.
Mm-hmm.
And one of those is going to hit the timeout, the built-in timeout. And you can't actually change the timeout in the web client class. So we have to use the stream, literally loop through, reading 65K from the web stream, 65K into the file stream.
Gotcha.
So we're just reading data in and out, and that's basically what we do in this loop here. We have a file stream, then we read bytes directly from the web. So
okay.
I'm going to read this stuff. That way, the other thing we can do is later extend this application and show actual time. How long is it taking for the 65K and do a dynamic time and see how long it's going to...
Status meter or
yeah,
something.
Give them an estimated time. So dynamic slowdown. So let me just click run here. And this is another thing. So now this is the create token request. If we try and download... our video, and if we look here, we're trying to download that Chocolate Rain.
Mm-hmm.
One of the things we can't do is actually use the download link, because the download link won't work unless we parse a token. We need a session token from the Shockwave Flash values that are passed to the page. So literally, what we do is screen scrape the page. So I'm going to choose the HTML visualizer, and we may need to give this a sec. But mind you, we're in a debug mode. This is what we've done.
Hmm.
We've gone to the page, gotten it in text form. So this is the string, and we're using the visualizer to get this page. And inside the source code for this page is this value called T. And T is a session token. So if you try and download a video, it mm-hmm. won't let you download a video unless you have a valid session token.
Right.
So I got to get that session token, parse that HTML that I just downloaded as a string, and get that variable out, and then use that to download that 65K.
And YouTube does this because they don't want people just hot linking to their videos. Right?
Exactly. Yep. So now we can see how this stuff goes. And literally here, we're just parsing out values from the JavaScript, looking for our values.
Gotcha.
So let's click run here. And our video starts to download, and maybe we can see this. So it's starting to download. Now, another thing you should note is all these videos are downloaded into your video files, and you can set this up. What it's actually going to do is sync to both iTunes and to Zune. So it'll dynamically detect if you have iTunes and Zune installed in your machine, and it'll register the files in iTunes.
Oh, wow.
And iTunes has their own SDK. It has a DLL that you can call.
Mm-hmm.
And we can look at that real quick. But when we actually sync to iTunes, we call iTunes, which has their library playlist, and we add a file. So we get all the files from that video's directory mm-hmm. that are MP4. And that's important because actually iTunes doesn't support WMV files, which is why we have to convert videos for both MP4 and WMV. WMV for Zune and for WPF. MP4 for iTunes.
And how do you convert the MP4?
Great question. There's actually a conversion class, which is our video converter. So in here, what we're doing is using a tool called FFmpeg, and we're passing in parameters. So if we had to do this on a command line, it would look like this, FFmpeg, and then we can actually dynamically set properties on the file. So if you look and did a file properties on our Chocolate Rain video, we could put in the title, the author, and the comment as well. And it does the conversion from Flash video, which is what it downloads from YouTube,
mm-hmm.
to MP4 or to WMV in this case.
Gotcha.
Yeah, so cool. The end of the day, let's see where we are in progress. If we can see here, the conversion's actually complete, and it did actually sync. So we have our video here, and we have it also in our iTunes library. So we'll do a quick search for Chocolate Rain.
Nice.
And our video, we can play it here, and of course we can always play our videos directly from our videos directory as well.
Gotcha.
So now the nice thing is we can take it on our devices, we can take it whatever, and you can set this up to automatically download. So next time you have to take a flight, say for the holidays, you can actually download your videos. All the source code's available. If you just want a nice API to access YouTube data or to access iTunes, you can always just use it for that.
Nice. And so you can get this via your book or if you go to CodePlex, right?
Yes, codeplex.com/innertube.
Gotcha.
Source code is available now, and c4fbook.com is the book, and that has both VB and C# versions.
Nice.
Very cool. So back into actual content.
Yes. So SpecSharp Design by Contract.
Yes.
What is this?
So I love Design by Contract, at least conceptually. Mm-hmm. I don't know how well it would work. So let's say we pass in, I'm going to add an employee.
To a list of employees?
To a database.
Okay.
Right now, you can only set in the data type, right? So, but you can't actually set any specifications, like the employee's name should be at maximum 200 characters.
Okay.
Their age shouldn't be negative. You can't do that, right?
That's discrimination, though.
You have to manually do that inside of your method, right? What Design by Contract says is, rather than saying, you're just going to give me a data type,
right.
Yes, it is discrimination, rather than just giving me a string or an int data type, no, I'm going to tell you exactly what you can do. You're going to give me a number, it's going to be within this range. So somebody's going to be 0 to... 150 years old.
Right.
Their name is going to be 200 characters. These characters aren't allowed. It lets you say exactly how your parameters should be passed. And what it does is really helps understand exactly what a method can and can't do. And you as a developer trying to program that method, you'll actually get design time compilation errors that'll say, hey, you're trying to pass in a number and this contract for this method says you can't pass this stuff in.
Right, so it's only enforced at design time. So you can still, compile your code past it, but it's a design time aid, right?
I actually think of runtime as well.
Okay.
But I'm saying, like, rather than having to click F5 to see that you have an error, you can
right.
now...
Right.
So conceptually, it's very interesting to be able to say, like, wow, we're going to be much more explicit than you give me any string or you give me any number.
So this is a plugin for Visual Studio then?
Yeah, and it's a language extension as well.
Okay.
So to be super clear, because it does a lot of things with attributes.
Right, I was going to say that's probably how you implement it, was with attributes.
Yeah, so there's a number of things here. Point is, it's available now for Visual Studio 2008.
That's great.
Yeah.
Very cool. So, Yohei. Am
yes.
I saying that right?
Yeah, Yohei.
Yohei. On everyone knows Tim Sneath. He's on Tim Sneath's team.
Yes.
And so he's just launched a new Windows dev blog. And so super interesting stuff here. One of the articles, VistaBridge.net API. So how do you write code that interacts with the cool, sexy, Vista-looking dialogues?
But I'm a .NET developer, Brian. I don't know C++.
Hey, fear not. Go check out Yohei's blog. and he's got a great post that talks about how to do that.
Yeah. So some pretty cool stuff, and should have a lot more there, too.
Yeah. Scott Guthrie, the Goo.
Yeah, I know. So this is pretty cool. It's a new ASP.NET control.
Mm-hmm.
So this is available in the same way their toolkit controls are available. But the key here is it's a server-side control. So it's ASP.NET :chart. But just look at the possibilities that it allows you to do. So those cool financial graphs in the top left, the circles in the top right, and of course the 3D lines and curve charts. Over 200 different samples that you can use and actually modify it live, because it's like in their quick starts,
right,
where you can just change parameters and see how these are built.
For free.
For free?
Yeah, all this, as long as you're using ASP.NET, it's all free.
Yeah.
Right.
This is amazing.
That's awesome. I don't think that this screenshot's real, though, because it shows financial data going upward.
Yeah, that must have been done before.
Yeah. But awesome. Scott's always got good
That might
posts.
Be murders. That might
oh,
be.
Oh, that could be.
Yeah. Being too negative now.
Silverlight 3, a lot of speculation going on out there.
Yeah, so here's what we do know.
Okay. What
so
do we know?
Sarah Perez talked about this, but in Silverlight 3, the big things that, and this is from Scott Guthrie's blog, but she does the quick and dirty summary.
Right.
So he's saying it's going to be next year, Silverlight 3.
Is that next calendar year, next fiscal year?
Who knows? So H.264 support, which is...
That's huge.
Sure.
Yeah.
Sure. I don't know anything about it, but if you say it's huge...
Yeah, it's pretty popular.
So what I do know about is 3D and GPU support. So right now, Silverlight applications, you're doing rich interaction. You don't have a way to do... You have... like quasi-3D.
Mm-hmm.
Now you can have true 3D support and GPU support. So, like, this is great for fast games. I mean, you talk about like
Quake
GPU.
Gets even better in 3D.
Think about it, man.
Yeah.
And importing, if they do things like, what I assume is they're going to use a number of the things that they've learned through WPF.
Right.
Which is actually using those .x files and those .net effects, potentially. Actually, we don't know anything.
We're full-time, Scott Guthrie, other full-time employees, unpaid interns, Dan and me.
Yeah, I'd put Guthrie higher, but...
Me than Dan. Yeah.
Oh, it's like that.
It's like that.
Okay, so this could be a lot of cool stuff. In particular, I have to assume they're going to use a number of the things that are similar in WPF 3D, which should be pretty cool.
Right. But with Silverlight, of course, they have to support cross-platform, so it'll be interesting to see how how they do that and what kind of differences, if any, you'll have between the different hardware and software platforms for 3D support.
Yeah, that's a no small order from an engineering perspective.
No. I'm sure there's an intern working hard at it right now.
Yeah, exactly.
So this is one we missed, actually, because we had a lot to cover the week before Thanksgiving, and then Thanksgiving was on us, and so we wanted to go back and talk about this Sea Dragon Ajax, or Sea Jax, as some people are calling it.
Okay.
So you know Sea Dragon, with it later became Deep Zoom.
Okay.
Yeah, not the 1964 B movie, but
okay.
You know, codename for Deep Zoom.
Yes.
And Deep Zoom allows you to, you know, go infinitely deep into images that you
like
put
the
up.
Hard Rock Cafe.
Exactly, hardrockcafe.com. Nice job, Vertigo, Scott Stanfield, all those guys. Well, that requires Silverlight, and so now here's a different implementation that's based on Ajax, and so you don't need to take the dependency on having Silverlight on the client in order to take advantage of these rich Sea Dragon / Deep Zoom experiences. So this is
you can do the zoom in, zoom out, all the wonderful things.
Exactly. I would expect that the Silverlight one is probably a little bit more robust, a little bit faster and richer, just like, you know, because you've got the local client processing.
Absolutely.
But at least you can still get some of the same functionality, even if your browser doesn't support Silverlight or your browser doesn't have Silverlight available.
Yeah, for users that don't have the cross-platform Silverlight runtime installed, this is there.
Right.
Yeah.
Yep.
Cool. So a guy named Rob Miles,
right,
who maybe people know, maybe don't know. Hilarious
UK,
guy.
Right?
Yes. He has several websites called Very Silly Games. He actually, you know how you can make Xbox 360 controllers rumble?
Yeah.
He does Building Your First XNA Game, which is just the rumbling controllers racing each other.
Oh, sweet.
So you get the idea of this man's madness. So he did a Coding for Fun article using the .NET Micro Framework version 3. And they have a couple boards, and what you can actually do is program the inputs to turn on with holiday lights based on RSS feeds. So the microcontroller goes, makes a web request to some RSS feeds, and if they've changed, they can actually turn lights on and off.
Oh, that's awesome.
Yeah, isn't it cool?
So you can have different colored lights linked up to different RSS feeds, is that the idea?
Absolutely.
That's awesome.
Yeah, exactly. So you can see a nice little sort of the internet twinkling in your background.
Oh, there's Scoble.
Yeah. Hey, wow. Okay.
Nice.
And then it can be your blog and it never turns on.
Hey.
Ouch. Oh.
Some people like it dark.
Oh.
All right.
Rico
Mariani. So this is I'm going to call it epic interview by Charles. Rico Mariani. It's like 90 minutes long. I think the last time I talked about it, it was 75 minutes long, so it keeps on getting longer and longer. This is the director's cut. But no, he sits down and literally just him and Rico just go through Niner's questions on previous videos. And so I love this interaction with the Nine community. We really do pay attention to what you guys are saying.
Yeah.
Except for you, Min. We really don't. Yeah.
Oh, no.
I'm just kidding.
It's because he hasn't done Yellow Harvest.
Yeah, we're still waiting for that.
I know. He said he's working on it.
Yeah,
all right.
Summer 2009.
He's like, the writer's strike screwed me, guys. It's terrible. I think it's great whenever we see sort of like interaction, and Rico's a brilliant guy, so like seeing him answering some of those questions is really cool.
Definitely. So block off your weekend to watch this one, because it's like 2 days long.
Yeah. It grows every time you say
exactly.
It was 4 hours if it was a day. Picks of the week.
So this is Research in Software Engineering, a.k.a. RISE. So if you go to research.microsoft.com/RISE, Pelly and a lot of the other guys over at Microsoft Research have been hard at work putting together their own kind of video gallery. So similar to Channel 9, actually a lot of these videos are hosted on Channel 9.
Right.
But giving you just one-stop shopping for all sorts of just crazy madness that these guys are working on. So everything from PEX, you know, PEX is
one of my
favorites, to another technology called Chess that Charles is going to be doing an interview on, to just all
Spec
sorts
Sharp.
Of, oh, Spec Sharp, of course.
Spec Sharp is in there.
Yeah, so all sorts of really cool technologies that are coming out of Microsoft Research. The only caveat I'll throw out there is that some of these technologies are, you know, still research projects and they haven't quite seen the light of day. But it's just really cool to go, you know, check out some of what the smartest people in the software research industry are thinking about and working on. So
yeah, I love this stuff because it's not just like plain research, it's research to make the process of software development, software engineering better.
Right.
So some really cool stuff there.
Yeah, absolutely. So that's my pick of the week.
Nice. So my pick of the week, and this is an old one, mm-hmm. but a good one. Since Johnny Chung Lee is obviously in the Coding for Fun book, I figured this would be a good time to show his TED video.
Yeah.
So for people that don't know TED, these are like an invite-only event. And just showing some
for
of the
people that don't know TED. For people that don't know YouTube and TED, everybody knows TED. TED's great.
All right,
technology, entertainment, design. Got it.
There you go.
I love TED videos.
So it's all over the place in terms of the spectrum. But
yeah.
We can go to a clip in this. But any other of your favorite TED videos that you?
Oh yeah, I mean you get everybody from Al Gore, Bill Clinton to you know like some Nobel Prize winner that you've never heard of to an 11-year-old violinist. I mean I love watching TED videos. I've been watching them every time I go to the gym. So I've got through about 3 videos so far. So there's a lot of them up there, and they're all available for free.
All right, so we'll go to the video I guess after we say goodbye.
Yeah,
it's a long one. So
that's right.
Thanks everyone.
So as researchers, something we often do is use immense resources to achieve certain capabilities or achieve certain goals. And this is essential to the progress of science or exploration of what is possible. But it sort of creates this unfortunate situation where a tiny, tiny fraction of the world can actually participate in this exploration or can benefit from that technology. And something that motivates me and what gets me really excited about my research is when I see simple opportunities to drastically change that distribution and make the technology accessible to a much wider percentage of the population. And I'm going to show you two videos that have gotten a lot of attention recently that I think embody this philosophy. And they actually use the Nintendo Wii remote. Now, for those of you who aren't familiar with this device, it's a $40 video game controller. And it's mostly advertised for its motion sensing capability, so you can swing a tennis racket or hit a baseball bat. But what actually interests me a lot more is the fact that in the tip of each controller is a relatively high-performing infrared camera. And I'm going to show you two demos of why this is useful. So here I have my computer set up with a projector, and I have a Wii remote sitting on top of it. And if, for example, if you're in a school that doesn't have a lot of money, which is probably a lot of schools, or if you're in an office environment and you want an interactive whiteboard, normally these cost about $2,000 to $3,000. So what I'm going to show you how to do it is how to create one with a Wii remote. Now, this requires another piece of hardware, which is this infrared pen. You can probably make this yourself for about $5 with a quick trip to the Radio Shack. It's essentially got a battery, a button, and an infrared LED, and it turns on. You guys can't see it, but it turns on whenever I push the button. Now, what this means is that if I run this piece of software, I can now register, the camera sees the infrared dot, and I can register the location of the camera pixels to the projector pixels, and now this is an interactive whiteboard surface. For about $50 of hardware, you can have your own whiteboard. This is Adobe Photoshop. Thank you. Now, the software for this I've actually put on my website and have let people download it for free. In the 3 months that this project has been public, it's been downloaded over 500,000 times. So teachers and students all around the world are already using this. I want to quickly say that although it does do it for $50, there are some limitations of this approach, but you get about 80% of the way there for about 1% of the cost. Another nice thing is that a camera can see multiple dots, so this is actually a multi-touch interactive whiteboard system as well. For the second demo, I have this Wii remote that's actually next to the TV, so it's pointing away from the display rather than pointing at the display. And why this is interesting, is that if you put on, say, a pair of safety glasses that have two infrared dots in them, what these two dots are essentially going to give you is give the computer an approximation of your head location. And why this is interesting is I have this little application running on the computer monitor, which has a 3D room with some targets floating in it. And you can see that it looks like a 3D room. If you can see, like a video game, it sort of looks 3D, but for the most part, the image looks pretty flat and bound to the surface of the screen. But if we turn on head tracking, the computer can change the image that's on the screen and make it respond to the head movement. So let's switch back to that. So this has actually been a little bit startling to the game development community. Because this is about $10 of additional hardware if you already have a Nintendo Wii. So I'm looking forward to seeing some games with it. And actually, Lewis Castle, sitting down there last week, announced that Electronic Arts, one of the largest game publishers, is releasing a game in May that has a little Easter egg feature for supporting this type of head tracking. So in less than 5 months, it went from a prototype in my lab to a major commercial product. But actually, to me, what's almost more interesting than either of these two projects is how people actually found out about them. YouTube has really changed the speed in which a single individual can actually spread an idea around the world. I'm just a researcher in my lab with a video camera, and within the first week, 1 million people had seen this work. And literally within days, engineers, teachers, and students from around the world were already posting their own YouTube videos of them using my system or derivatives of this work. So I hope to see more of that in the future and hope online video distribution to be embraced by the research community. So thank you very much.